It's time for this bi-weekly meeting of the Finance and Business Committee of Denver City Council. Join us for the Finance and Business Committee starting now.
Final day of September, when Tuesday, September 30, you've reached the Finance and Business Committee of Denver City Council. My name is Paul Cashman. I serve as the vice chair of this committee. I have the honor of filling in today for Chairperson Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, one of our at-large representatives. I also have the pleasure of representing District 6. We have some folks arriving a little bit late. We have some folks online right now, and I'm going to go online first, see if council members Watson or Lewis might be there.
Hi, good morning, Councilwoman Lewis, District 8.
Thank you for being here. And we'll wait along the way and see if others join us, and I will complete introductions by going to my partner to the right.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Diana Romero-Campbell, Southeast Denver, District 4.
Great. Well, our agenda today is a combination. We have a couple of action items regarding the purchase of some properties on Tremont Place downtown. We're going to start off with welcoming our auditor, Tim O'Brien, and his team to talk to us about the 2026 budget for Denver Labor. So if you'd like to have a seat and introduce the assembled throng, and the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Tim O'Brien. I'm the Denver auditor. To my right is Cindy Lebrano. She's my business manager. To my left is Matt Fritzmauer. He's the executive director of Denver Labor. Valerie Walling, deputy auditor, is in the audience, as well as Mike Brennan. He's my communications director. So I'm going to ask Cindy to walk through the presentation that we have, and then we'll be happy to answer any and all questions that the committee may have.
Terrific. Thank you. Before we get started, I'd like to welcome Council President. I'd like to introduce.
Councilwoman Sambo, Northwest Denver District 4. Sorry.
It's not just Denver Labor.
A hard copy for you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having us here. As Auditor O'Brien mentioned, I'm Cindy Lebrano, the business manager for the Auditor's Office. I think you have a presentation of our slide deck. The vision of our office is to deliver value and impact for Denver, and we follow the highest professional standards. The mission of our office is to deliver independent, transparent, and professional oversight to safeguard and improve the public's investment in the city and county of Denver. Our work is performed on behalf of everyone who cares about the city, including its residents, workers, and decision makers. Next slide. We have a brief agenda today. We're going to talk a little bit about the duties and requirements of the auditor's office, our city charter, our local and federal labor law compliance, the budget allocation that the mayor suggests, and Matt is going to talk about a little bit about the Denver labor budget and the need for a litigator. Our next slide goes into detail a little bit of the auditor's office. Our office is driven by City Charter Article 5, which establishes independence of the auditor's office and authority and duties while conducting audits of the city and county of Denver. I'll pause here a little bit and kind of jump back and forth a little bit, but I just want to mention that the importance of our work is to keep the city agencies functioning at the highest standards. And our next bullet there is the enforcement of city wage ordinance, which includes the prevailing wage, civil wage, and minimum wage ordinances within the city, and then federal enforcement, which is the oversight of the Davis-Bacon Act, on behalf of contractors and subcontractors on federally funded construction projects, such as the airport. The importance of this work, obviously, is based on serving the citizens who work in the city of Denver, who experience wage theft, reduced benefits, or misclassification of their rates. Next slide. I'm going to talk a little bit about our budget allocation. We're here to request that our budget remain flat. Last year, we were given a $16,196,607 million budget in 2025, and the mayor has suggested a decrease of 3% of our budget for the coming year. This really clashes with our independence, steps on our toes regarding the management of our budget dollars, and we just want to challenge that suggestion of a budget cut of the 3%, which roughly comes to about $500,000, just over $500,000. Our next point is that, you know, the mayor and the finance department really don't have any oversight to dictate who we can or cannot hire. Again, based on the city charter, we need to be able to hire based on our discretion, based on our workload. We're currently down several staff, and that really impedes the ability to continue our work throughout the year. We have an aggressive audit schedule, as we do every year for 2026, and with the inability to hire at our discretion, this really doesn't allow us to complete our scheduled audits. Our third bullet point there is that we will still commit to save that 3%, but we have to have the authority to determine that ourselves. We're very mindful of our budget situation. I spend a careful eye on everything that we spend. I'm probably one of the most critical. I have people coming to me for office supplies, and I question every penny. I assure you we're not spending carelessly, but really are doing the work that the office is meant to do based on their charter, based on our independence. We can go to the next slide. Next slide talks a little bit about our Denver labor's need, and so I'm going to turn that over to Matt because he can do a much better job than I can at explaining that.
Thank you. So Matt Fitzmaurer, Executive Director of Denver Labor.
I'll talk about some of the risks that we are facing in our office, particularly in regards to wage enforcement as a result of the proposed budget cut. And I'll actually talk a little bit more broadly than the need for a Denver labor litigator, although that is extremely important. Last May and June, I believe, City Council passed an amendment to our ordinance allowing us to do co-enforcement grants to trusted community organizations. And the instruction we received was to ask for a $120,000 line item in our budget for this year. We did not do that because we think that we can just absorb it into our flat budget, get those co-enforcement grants out, expand our reach, especially into high-risk populations like immigrant workers, especially as these workers are understandably more scared than ever of relying on the government for help in the workplace. That our ability to make those grants is extremely at risk as a result of this budget cut. We have also adopted some really proactive enforcement strategies in the last 2.5 years since City Council passed the wage theft ordinance, expanding our authority. We run towards the hard cases, the cases where people are not likely to be able to get lawyers, but where violations are going to be widespread. Again, especially in the staffing industry among undocumented people. I think all of you have probably seen in the news our work enforcing the rights of people at strip clubs in Denver. These cases, the result is that we are doing more than ever. We're collecting more money than ever. We're enforcing the rights of more people than ever. So we have about a month left in our tracking year, which runs through the end of October. Last year, we set a record and enforced the rights of 4,505 workers. This year, we're already at around 5,800. I mean, we're seeing these massive jump ups as a result of our proactive strategies. The problem is the hard cases is where the law gets made. It's where the restitution amounts are higher. It's where the issues are larger. And so we also have more appeals. Again, especially from, I would say, companies that make a business practice out of violating the law. The city attorney's office has been unable to meet our needs. I have a lot of respect for the city attorney's office. They know that I am saying these things right now. We've talked about it very frankly. And the solution that we've come up with is that we should contribute an amount of money to get a litigator who we're entitled to 50% of their time. That would be approximately $110,000. That would allow us to process the important cases that we're doing. I'll just give you two examples. In late February, we issued determinations finding tens of millions of dollars in restitution owed to workers at two strip clubs, Rick's Cabaret and Diamond Cabaret. We haven't been able to process those appeals to a hearing officer yet. Those decisions have been appealed. We want to go to a hearing. We want to keep this process moving, but we haven't had the litigation support we need to do that. As another example, we have been investigating retaliation at another strip club. We used our subpoena authority to demand information that you all granted us last April. The club challenged that authority, and we haven't been able to process this dispute either to a hearing officer because we need more litigation support. And so we have this real bottleneck in the important work that we do, which we could address with a flat budget, but not with fees. It's at risk with these forced reductions, in addition to the independence points that Cindy made. So I think that's what I wanted to share. There are more examples, but I hope I've given you all an idea of the picture. And I think we are happy to answer questions.
Yeah, I think if I could close, Mr. Chairman, we are committed, to saving money for the city. We recognize the dilemma that the city is in financially, today. I believe that neither the mayor nor the Department of Finance has the authority to cut my budget. That's the council's job to, decide what the auditor's budget should be or should not be. So I will be asking if this 3% cut goes through in the mayor's budget, I will be asking the council to restore those dollars to the auditor's budget. Further, I think, some of the directives that are coming out of the Department of Finance are really impeding my ability to do the job I was elected to do. We have difficulty getting approval to hire staff in vacant positions that are already authorized in the current budget. It's outright interference, in my opinion, and it's a difficult environment for us to work in.
And if I could add one more thing, I forgot to mention, our budget is $16.2 million, but we have a lot of people who are paid in whole or in part out of the Airport Enterprise Fund. So we've got a team of seven that does prevailing wage compliance work at the airport. All of these people have furloughed without complaint to be part of the solution, but we do expect that of that $16.2 million, we will recover from the airport approximately $2.2 million this year that will go back into the general fund. And that $2 million number is pretty steady over the last 3 years.
Great. Well, thank you for the presentation. Start with Council President Sandoval.
Thank you. I've asked the city attorney's office about splitting the attorney, and they've told me no. So who at the city attorney's office do you have that has said yes? I don't think that's actually been agreed upon, if I'm correct.
So I've had discussions over the last year or so with Deanne Durfee, Matt Mulbarger, Katie McLaughlin, and then we had an initial meeting with the new city attorney about 3 weeks ago. I think it was her first week.
And what was Nico's, did they agree?
They've been good to work with. They're going to try to get us more litigation support, but I think we all agree that the ideal solution is us contributing some money to support the work.
Let me ask just a quick question. Did they agree to splitting the attorney? Because I've heard that that's not an agreement. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but do you have an email or something that shows that that's the agreement?
Not an email, but I remember asking about that specifically, and they said that that was not abnormal, and I thought would be doable.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll follow back up on that one. So with the $500,000 that is being asked for 2026, how many employees is that?
I'd say it's a half a dozen.
Six?
Does that sound right?
With, like, with fringe and everything?
No, it's probably 3 to 4.
Yeah.
I'd say 3 to 4, depending on the position, because we have various levels that are currently open.
And so what positions are you looking for? Because they, like, even a council aide, right? Like a council aide in our offices with retirement fringe and all of the other, it, you know, it doesn't cost what you put down on their salary. It costs more.
Of course.
So what kind of positions are you looking for? Can you paint a broader picture for me?
We currently have a lead auditor, a lead IS auditor open.
And what's that salary range?
That salary, Valerie might have to help me out there, but I think it's probably about 110 plus about 30,000 with benefits.
Yeah, 40, some depending on what insurance plan they pick, right?
Yes, absolutely, and other considerations, of course. And then we have two senior auditors open.
What's that salary range?
That salary range is closer to 90,
okay,
I believe, for a starting senior. We have three positions open in Denver Labor, two techs, which are currently at an hourly range. They start at $29 an hour, which comes to about 56 or 58,000, I believe.
Yes, they're not salary.
They're not salary. Okay. And their benefits typically run a little bit less, closer to 25,000. And then we have a analyst open at Denver Labor that starts at, it's about 76, I want to say.
It is. I just want to add, one of those tech positions is specialized, and it has to, it's really focused on approving fringe benefits for city contractors. Okay. So about half of that would be covered by the Airport Enterprise Fund.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, so the additional is the analyst, which starts at about 76, I believe.
Okay. And then for you, Auditor O'Brien, are you participating in furloughs? Are you writing a check back?
Absolutely. And all of the staff are participating in the furlough.
Yeah, they don't have a choice. Like, my staff doesn't have a choice.
Right.
My staff has to furlough.
Right.
But you as an elected official don't have to furlough. You have to write a check back. So it's
correct.
Not, like, I don't think any of our staff here have a choice. It's all mandatory. We're in the same position, and it's up to us as electeds to see if we write a check back.
Right.
If I could say one other thing. Auditor O'Brien also has elected to keep two of his appointee positions open. So to be part of the solution and keep our, you know, budget as low as we can, I guess, for personnel costs. So that's a, you know, very large expense that we're kind of holding on the side.
So that's in addition to the 500,000?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the comments that you made was that it's challenging to do your job with less right now. I would say it's challenging for me to do my job with less right now. We have impacts to neighborhood plans that are going to be pushed out because community planning and development. We have trash service that doesn't get picked up, and we all do constituent services. We have permits that are going to be not looked at. And so I would encourage you all to say we instead of I, because it's all of us in this together. You're an independent elected auditor. We're independent electeds, and we all are having to do something. So it's not just one agency that is having a hard time and asking to be do more with less. It's all of us. Right? And for me, this is not the first time that my staff has had to do furloughs. This is not the first time that my staff has been asked to do more with less resources. And so when I'm looking at this, I'm thinking more holistically and asking how could we have what's best for the residents of Denver. And I do understand that a $500,000 impact will impact your agency greatly. Have you thought about a supplemental? So there always is an opportunity after we pass the budget and we approve the budget for the following year if there is something that comes up that's that, say, payout of PTO, right? Let's just talk hypothetically, not talk about your work. That there is an opportunity to do a supplemental. So in your time, have you ever had to go down that route to do a supplemental? And have you looked at that opportunity to say, hey, right now, this is the budget that we'd have to live within, and then workshop what it would look like to come in for a supplemental in maybe 2026?
We have not had to go down that road in the past. Obviously, that's an option for us. You know, if we feel that we're constrained that much. You know, I think there's really a principle at stake here, which is cutting the auditor's budget. So it's 3% this year. Maybe next year it's 30%. Maybe, you know, 10 years from now, we, you know, cut it by even more. And again, I know the charter says that the council shall appropriate to the auditor, you know, the funds necessary to do the job, something to that effect.
And it also says that the city council should appropriate the funds to do civil service, to hire our firefighters and our police officers. Mm-hmm. It also says city council should appropriate funds for the clerk and recorder. It also says the city council should appropriate funds for, there's five. So the auditor is one of five. Mm-hmm. So that charter responsibility keeps coming up. And I will just say, I have never reminded you of what your job is as auditor. So it doesn't land right when I keep being told what my job is as the city council person who oversees the charter of what our charter authority is. I know what my charter authority is, and what I've heard is it can be subjective. My idea of what appropriating enough funds for you to be able to do your job might be very different than what your idea is, correct? City Council, with 13 independent electeds, does not have your budget. My colleague here, who represents the entire city of Denver, does not even have a fraction of your budget. And so for an independent body, we make up less than 1% of 1% of the budget. It's not even close to $16 million. And so we represent a lot of people and we do a lot of work. And so I understand that we all are needing to have the resources to be able to do our jobs and be able to do them in the manner that we need to have them, that we feel like is really important to be able to do the work that we do. And I'll just say I've been reviewing the charter. I take my charter authority very seriously. I got sworn in, same with you, Auditor O'Brien. So I'm very aware of what the charter calls out for us to be able to do our job. And I'm also very aware of all of the other responsibilities that we have falling amongst City Council. It's hard when you have to make a budget amendment to come up with what is needed for the budget to find. So if we're taking to give to you, we have to take it from another agency. We have to take it from another service. It doesn't like it just can come out of nowhere. We literally would have to find a line item and or a fund and take it from there and move it over to you, to the auditor. And so that's really challenging in a time when we're seeing temporary rental service go down. It's very challenging when we're seeing evictions go down. It's very challenging when we have public comment every Monday night for family shelters, for some of our vulnerable families that we don't have enough family shelters out there for them. So I feel like probably all of us on City Council right now probably feel a lot of the weight of having to do a lot with less or more with less. We don't have a lot of the services that we have always relied on. One of the things that we get to do at City Council is land use. And we've been told by CPD that our legislative, that we won't have as many, as big of ability to have legislative rezonings done because they don't have the staff. And that's clearly called out in the charter that we have land use authority. So we are also being told that we're not going to be able to do our job, and I rezoned my whole council district for accessory dwelling units before the city. So that would mean that I don't have the opportunity to lead some of those projects. So I understand, I just want you to all, I think that right now we all need to stop and think about the other people that we're talking to and how this budget crisis is impacting all of us and impacting the whole greater good of the city. So those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Before we continue with the queue, I'll welcome Councilmember Gonzalez Gutierrez, Councilmember Watson. Thank you for coming. Next up, Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell, then Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just wanted to ask for clarification. Is the $500,000 that you're looking for, the positions that you had mentioned, the 3 to 4 positions, are those vacant positions that would then not be filled?
Well, what we're asking is that our budget remain flat from this current year and not be reduced. Mm-hmm. And the amount of reduction is $500,000.
And the positions that you named, are those filled positions or vacant positions?
Those are vacant positions. But the reason we mention that is because the finance office has placed a hold on positions, and we don't feel like we should have to go through them to hire as an independent agency that, you know, circumvents our authority.
Okay. And I don't know if you had mentioned this and I might have missed it. Did anybody in the auditor's office, did you participate in any of the layoffs?
There were no layoffs.
So current number of staff that you have in the auditor's office now?
I believe it is at 91. I may be off by one count.
Okay. I think we're down about 10% right now. So
yes.
So there's always some amount of churn. And so there were some open positions that we kept open. Okay. And there were some resignations or other exits.
We have 7 vacant currently. 2 we did receive approval to hire for, and then our 2 appointees are vacant.
Gotcha.
So a total of 9 at this moment.
And then just for clarification, I was trying to track the $2.2 million that you would get back from Den. Can you explain that just a little bit more? It doesn't come back to you, it would go back to general fund
or
savings, or I just wasn't quite sure how that circle of dollars went.
We get a general fund appropriation. The work that we do at the airport, whether it's an audit or, you know, some of the labor law enforcement, we bill the airport for, and then those dollars go back into the general fund.
And it's 7 positions that basically are doing that work for the... If I heard correctly, there's 7 positions that are doing
the Denver labor side.
Yeah.
There are 7 full-time Denver labor positions, and then there's an allocation within the office based on what work you do. Some of us contribute more than others. Some are 50%, some are 20% per month. The auditors, based on the audits that are ongoing at the airport, will change every month, potentially, until that audit is completed, and then the next audit begins. And there could be more than one airport audit going on at a time. Their cost is 100% allocated based on that audit. So if they're working on 2 audits, it might be 50-50.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
And just out of curiosity, how many audits do we have going on at the airport right now?
3. Thank you.
Okay. And are there projected to be
there are
in the future, or is that just pretty standard? I just don't know.
It does change. I don't know what the projection is in the plan upcoming, but it does change periodically. Sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less.
Okay.
There's always at least one.
But there's always, right, at least one audit.
At least one. Okay.
And just to give you an idea, we average about 4,200 audit hours a month combined, approximately, and it's typically about 15% of that time is spent at DIA. Sometimes a percent or 2 more, sometimes up to 18%.
Okay.
for audit work.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. I don't have any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Councilwoman Gonzalez-Gutierrez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here and handling everything. And I apologize for being a little bit late. So I had a quick question about the of course, the Labor Division and specifically the wage theft litigation and everything. And I know I'd come in right when you were talking about the city attorney piece. And so... So did you give a landscape, because I know I'd met with you all about that particular issue, and so did you provide a landscape of what is happening and the number of cases that we're not able to, or it just takes a really long time, I guess.
Or we're just not able to process, and we've been at a standstill for some months now.
Yeah.
And if I may,
go ahead.
The willingness to litigate on behalf of these workers is paramount to reaching a resolution. So I just got back from vacation. We were supposed to have a 3-day hearing involving what we'd identified as widespread minimum wage and paid sick and other violations. And as often happens, right before the hearing, the employer decided they did want to talk settlement. That was only possible because the hearing was right there. And so we now have a settlement for $293,000. For these workers. And Council President Sandoval, the point you were making earlier about what's best for the people of Denver, I don't want to overstate the extent to which we're revenue generating in terms of fines that we bring into the general fund, but we are seeing a new pattern emerge of tens of thousands of dollars a year that we hope to increase. And the only reason that's possible is because we aren't afraid to litigate. And then we're seeing a pattern emerge of hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in unpaid wages going back to people who earned them in the first place, again, backed by the promise of litigation.
I really appreciate that work, and I know that members of our body have worked really hard to increase the protections there for our workers. And I guess, you know, more of a statement, I guess, than a question, and kind of hearing the conversation that's been had around budget and where everything is at. I think this is a very difficult time as we went through all of the budget briefings last week and learned what will remain and what will be no longer, or what will be on pause, or what will not be funded to the fullest extent. And I appreciate Council President bringing up, you know, a lot of the different hardships that we're going to see and what that impact will be on people in our city, especially people who are in the most need. And I see people that are facing wage theft issues, are not getting paid. That is also essential. Right. And I think there is something to be said about having to balance all of these priorities. And it goes back to something that I think as a body we talked about very early on, which is the needs and the nice to haves.
Yeah.
And I think that's the challenge that we'll be faced with going forward, is what are the needs and what are the nice to haves and what are our community's needs versus things that look pretty. And I think that's the state that we're in. And so when I think about our city budget, when I think about the work of the auditor's office, or whether it's HOST or our HRCP, it is where can we have the most minimum amount of impact on those that are most vulnerable? And I would say in the auditor's office, it is in the labor division, and it is with the work that you're doing to help people with their wage theft claims and make them whole again. So I appreciate that work and know that I can only speak for myself as an individual council member, but that is something that I am paying attention to is and trying as much as I can to locate within our city's budget, are there places that and things that are being, money that is being spent on things that maybe could be more on a pause versus the things that are having a direct impact on the folks that need it the most. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Councilmember Watson, and just for a time check, I'm going to call this in about 10 minutes, so we have time for our action items.
I'll be quick. I have pretty much two questions. I want to apologize to the body. I had a conflict that I could not get out of, so I apologize for coming late. I missed a part of your presentation, and obviously I read through the presentation documents prior to coming. Can you share with me once again the impact of that 3% reduction? Are you stating that that will have a negative impact on your ability to do wage theft litigation, wage theft work based on your new your increased responsibilities on wage theft? What's the impact of that 3% reduction from 2025 to 2026?
I think the reduction slows down what we have momentum with today, and that it slows down getting people paid the dollars that they've earned, whether it's minimum wage or prevailing wage. It slows down the litigation process because we need, to be funding a litigator through the city's attorney's office.
And if I could just stress, I think the moment and the opportunity we have, our office has a reputation where workers who don't trust the government talk to us. And we all think a lot about undocumented people, but I can't tell you how much I've learned that it's quite extraordinary that so many entertainers at strip clubs speak to us about their rights violations, a group of people who are really on the social and economic margins and have often, they have learned, unfortunately, that the government is there to hinder them and their interests. We are able to work with these people to enforce their most basic civil rights, but we have this standstill, especially with those cases, because of the lack of litigation support, which is meant to be a factual comment on the resources of the city attorney's office and how our work has grown, and not a complaint about anyone at the city attorney's office.
And I hear you clearly. And because of time today, and obviously I'm certain this will be coming back when we get to the floor for amendments, most likely there will be requests for additional dollars from somewhere within this body. I want to be very clear. We have independent agencies. My office as District 9 is an independent agency. So is every city council office. We are facing headwinds when it comes to our budget for 2026. All of our departments, every entity, including independent agencies like Denver City Council, has agreed to, and I'm out of my own pocket paying back dollars to the city because I see the impacts to city employees, to services, to all of the departments that did reductions. They are sincerely certain that what they are reducing has legitimate impact to delivering on their responsibilities to the residents of this city. And so the auditor's impact of 3%, I'm gonna need a lot more information, clarity. As we look from 2019 forward, we see an exponential growth within your office. And obviously you are doing much, much more than you were doing then. The presentation that I received is not convincing to me that this 3% would have that direct impact on your ability to execute on the powers you asked us to provide to you. And so I look forward to having a deeper dialogue once this comes to the floor. But I know with speaking with other departments, speaking with other council members, each agency, including independent agencies like ours, City Council, have taken a hit because of the budget that we're facing. I think 3% at this point seems reasonable to me, and I look forward to hearing more from your team as this possibly comes to the floor with clearer details as on your impact to actually legislate on the powers that you asked us to provide to you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I do have a question for Mr. Griffin. So the auditor brought up early on the overriding question of, excuse me, does the administration have the legal right to determine the auditor's budget to make cuts? I know our clerk has raised similar objections. How does this get resolved past, if the agencies don't come to agreement with the mayor? Does this end up going to court? Is there legal precedent? Can you opine a little bit?
John Figgerton, Deputy Legislative Counsel. So to kind of answer your first question,
the mayor has the obligation under the charter to prepare a balanced budget that looks at all offices, agencies, et cetera, which includes City Council, the auditor, and the clerk and recorder's office. City Council then, as was pointed out in the presentation, has an obligation to pass a budget to ensure that the city operates in a state and that the balance of the budget remains balanced. As for whether or not there could be litigation as a result of it, as you've seen, the charter provisions state the same as the clerk and recorders to sufficiently run the office. To my knowledge, that's never been challenged, and I can't really opine on what would be a sufficiency question. I think at that point it would come down to really a fact-based analysis that we couldn't speak to.
Thank you very much. Yeah. And I'll just ask the auditor if you can answer briefly. Do you disagree with that analysis that the charter says the mayor has the right to address the budgets of the independent agencies?
I think the charter says that the auditor will submit through the mayor the auditor's budget to use the processes that the mayor outlines.
That's fine for today. I thank you very much, not just for your presentation, but the great work that Denver Labor is doing. I mean, the money you're bringing back to people who would otherwise have been cheated out of their rightful earnings is really relevant, and it's a good thing that government is doing for the residents. So we'll hear more about this as the next few weeks of budget discussions go on. So again, thanks to our auditor's team, Auditor O'Brien, thank you so much.
Thanks for your time.
You betcha, you betcha. And we will take a minute to transition over. I'm guessing we have a team from Host and Real Estate, perhaps. We have a couple of items that we need to vote on regarding the potential acquisition of property on Tremont Street. And I guess I'm going to make it easy on me and turn the floor over to Lisa Lumley from Real Estate. And whoever else is going to present can introduce themselves.
Thank you. Good morning, Lisa Lumley, Director of Real Estate.
And Jackson Brockway, the Capital Planning and Programming Team in Department of Finance.
So do we have it up? There we go. So, yes, we are here to talk about a potential acquisition of 1460 and 1480 Tremont. So we will go through the council actions, the property acquisition overview, and then leave room for any questions. So the first is a resolution 251425 to approve the purchase and sale agreement. It's with the family, a number of different entities, including GSC LLC, Great Falls Family Limited Partnership, LLLP, Tremont Lewin Properties LLC, and Ruth Ann West for the Tremont acquisitions. And then Bill 251426 would be to appropriate capital improvement program contingency funds to provide the funding to acquire then both of the Tremont parcels. So if you can see the red dot on the map in relationship to the web building there, it is actually two parcels. Total is approximately 12,500 square feet. There is a small building. This is the former Goodyear. The building's 4,866 square feet. The building really is a non-issue for us. We're looking at the land. This is in Council District 10. The zoning is DC, and again, there are the list of the multiple sellers. The purchase price is $2.5 million, and the source of the funds would be capital improvement fund contingency that we'll get to in a minute. So we are looking at this, and Adam is here to speak to any questions you have regarding affordable housing and hosts, but this is definitely supported in our downtown area plan that has just recently been wrapped up, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes, too.
Yeah. But by acquiring these properties, then our goal would be to work with one of the pre-qualified developers that we recently did the RFP with, and bring in a partner to work on an affordable housing project in downtown. This would be a great connection to the 16th Street Mall. It is walkable, it's transit friendly, and again, it's zoned for that high density. The second request here is a companion for $2.525 million from contingency. I want to pause for a minute and just say real estate is starting to draft our purchase and sale agreements a little bit differently that you will see going forward. We'll have the purchase price, but then we are trying to include some closing costs just and then increase that maximum contract amount just so that if anybody sees settlement statements and it's more than $2.5 million, you all know why, and we have given you the heads up about that. So that does include $25,000 for closing costs. And again, this will align with the use of the capital contingency. So our timeline is here today, Mayor Council next week, City Council on the 13th, with the companion second reading on October 20th. And then the RFP, real estate and host would work together to prepare an RFP fairly soon after that. We'll look at the timing of the end of the year so that we make sure we're sending it out at a good time to get the best responses. And then from there, start the construction project as soon as we can. And with that, are there any questions?
That may have been the most brief presentation in 10 years on City Council. Congratulations. I'm going to start off real quick with a question. So when you're talking about the capital contingency fund, we have a general fund contingency fund. Is this a separate element? Will you talk about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the reason I ask, Councilwoman Alvidrez, who couldn't be with us this morning, expressed a concern about taking money from contingency in these difficult budget times. So I want to address that.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to that. CIF contingency is a separate fund that lives within our capital improvements fund. So this has no impact on the general fund specifically. Each year when we put together the budget, in which council approves, does include a percentage of base revenues that are used for contingency purposes. So our full contingency policy is available on page 604 of the budget book, but principally it is available for things like emergency repairs that may come up, exceedingly high bids on a project that we receive, or it can include things like really changes in agency work plans or unique opportunities, which often we do see in the real estate space. And so generally within the first half of any year, we tend to not touch or use contingency at any point unless there is some type of emergency need that arises. As we do get to the second half of the year and we have a more or less clear line of sight for the rest of the year, we have both this year and we have in the past found these real estate opportunities, which can be hard to project or predict in an upcoming budget cycle. And that's why this was recommended as a funding source for this option.
If I can put a pin in that, so is there a percentage? In other words, you aim for 10% contingency. So where are we at this point with the contingency? Mm-hmm. And we've got, three months left in the year.
Yeah, that's a great question. So contingency is, depending on the year, it's usually between 4 and 5% of base revenues. So contingency in 2025 was $7.4 million. We actually haven't used any of our 2025 contingency at this point in the year.
And if there is money left, it will roll over, I assume.
That is correct. Money left over would roll into CIF fund balance. We generally, when we roll those numbers forward, we generally, for our revenue projections in the year, we don't count it for the upcoming year, but that would create fund balance to be used in future years.
Yeah, so excess in the contingency goes back into the overall capital fund. And then you determine how much you will set aside for the coming year contingency.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yep.
Council Pro Tem Romero Campbell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you for the presentation. My questions are kind of they'll be the same as they were during the briefing. If you could tell me a little bit more about the contingency funds, if it goes towards this, they could be used for a variety of things across the city, correct? So what are we not getting to? I'm thinking of, you know, there are repairs at Rec Center. There are a variety of smaller projects that have been in a queue for a number of years within, I know, District 4. How will this impact those jobs coming to completion?
Yeah, that's a great question. I know we have some time set up to talk about some projects in your district. Or I think we're working to schedule some time. So looking forward to talking through that specifically. The short answer within the CIF contingency question is it doesn't have a direct impact or wouldn't take away necessarily from what we could get done in the next budget year. When we talked about how contingency is rolled into future years, when we project our revenues, we generally do not count the contingency roll into that next year, but it would kind of factor into any future fund balances for 2027. So that is something, it's an active conversation we could have about looking at the work plan in future years. The other thing I would say is in the presentation we gave to you all last Monday to kick off our budget hearings is we really wanted to focus this year on both what projects are deliverable, what we could get done and move forward in a reasonable timeframe, as well as making sure that our agency partners have enough resources to really deliver those projects and make sure we're not necessarily overcommitting the time of our project managers. And we do feel like the package we've put together for the 26 CIP, in addition, if the voters do sign off on the Vibrant Denver Bond Program, we want to make sure that we have enough capacity to deliver all of those projects, as well as kind of the work that's progressing that's been funded in past years.
So the dollars that would be this particular purchase of property is focused on future housing needs. Is there a reason why this wouldn't come out of HOST or a HOST budget to look at affordable housing and land acquisition?
Well, I think there's a combination when we're getting down to the end of this year where we are looking at those different funding sources. I think we felt like at this point and based on some of the other projects going on with HOST, why looking at contingency this late in the year was appropriate. I know that there had been some questions about DDA and could we have used that to acquire, which we couldn't because truthfully, as this was negotiated, that was even before DDA was approved. And we can't go backwards retro. Although we can, once we own it, submit it into DDA, and that can be considered with the developer partner as part of the capital stack in the future, which is also then how we look at some of the HOST funds as well, on what they could be, how they would contribute to that potential development.
Great. You answered my next question. I just have to say I am concerned. I know it's 2.25, I think, is 2.5 million dollars that are being asked for, which I think downtown is, if that's reasonable, I don't know what's reasonable, but it's lower than other things that we've heard of. What I'm worried about is that projects that are smaller, more locally based, things that have been on the list for a number of years in Southeast Denver continue to get rolled forward and never get completed. And so I'm worried that we will purchase land, which is, you know, a great idea to be able to do that land banking, and I'm not opposed to that. However, what I am concerned about is, especially in our budget year and as we're looking at projects that, you know, a crossing light won't get completed in Southeast Denver, that we won't get those repairs. I know that we're hoping and cautiously optimistic for the bond to pass, but if that bond doesn't pass, then repairs at the rec center don't happen. Things along the Highline Canal don't happen. Along Evans, an implementation of our corridor plans won't occur. And so I have to say I'm just really challenged from the source of this funding and a little confused as to still why it wouldn't be coming out of HOST.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I've got a full queue. Councilman Watson, Councilman Lewis, Council President Sandoval, and Councilman Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Thank you so much, Committee Chair. I would say, Jackson and team, I think as we discussed in the budget process, it's going to be essential for the department to provide kind of the CIP priorities for 2026. I think that's going to reduce maybe some questions and concern as far as priorities regionally. The look of this, once again, additional dollar stores downtown may not feel like an equitable lens is being used for the contingency funding. I think it's important for us as council members to be aware of 2025, 2026 CIP, what that rollover is and what the priorities are across the city. My question to your team is for the Denver area plan, we are moving steadfastly through that process. The downtown area plan, not Denver area plan, I keep saying that. Is this, does this meet based on the base level of suggestions for land use within downtown? Is this section segment listing for housing? Does anyone have any sense? I don't know if we have anyone from CPD here, but it will be helpful to see that this is aligned with what we're thinking of for the downtown area plan. If you don't have the answer today, it'll be great for that for you to have that at a later time.
We don't have CPD here. Adam, I don't know what you're talking
about. Adam's a wizard, but I don't know if you...
Well, that's why.
Good afternoon, Adam Lyons, Deputy Director of Housing Opportunity for Host. Yeah, you know, I have been involved in the downtown area planning process, and there are a number of draft recommendations in that draft plan now around, you know, just residential development kind of generally, especially around affordable housing development, mixed use, so ground floor commercial with residential above, as well as mixed income projects, and then a whole slew of other strategies around preservation, which wouldn't really be applicable here. But yeah, I can't really speak to the exact land use of this parcel, but affordable housing development, preservation is well documented in that draft plan.
Okay. And I'll confirm then for
that'll be a good confirmation. And then one last ask from Dr. Cog's needs assessment review that's coming up for 2026, as well as host needs assessment. It'll be helpful to identify really the needs for housing and housing starts. We know we've seen several developments where housing has been reduced based on the market and the changing in kind of the needs assessment for additional housing within the density of our downtown areas across the country. So we'd love a little bit more of that as this move, if this moves to the floor. Thank you so much, Committee Chair.
Thank you. Councilwoman Lewis, are you with us?
I am still here. Thank you so much. I had a few questions. The first one was, I wanted to know if the land would still be owned by the city that the development would occur on.
I think that has been, you know, again, I think we've talked about, Councilwoman, with host, that we will look at these each project specific on whether would we sell it versus a ground lease. I think we've talked about, especially for being downtown, we would retain ownership and just keep a ground lease in place.
That can you help me to understand what goal this, like what strategic priority this is attached to for the mayor's office? Because I've heard the mayor's office say that they were intentional about owning our land, and that was one of the reasons that they were closing some of the sites in both District 8 and 9 when it came to sheltering. But this seems like it's going in a different direction than that stated.
No, Councilwoman, if we keep a lease, that means we will own it, and we'll just lease it to that developer. So we would always retain the actual fee title to the property.
What would you lease it at?
You mean a dollar value?
Uh-huh.
I'm again, because we would look for that to be a true affordable housing development, then it would probably be similar to what we've done with our other host projects, and that would be a nominal $10 a year kind of transaction.
Lisa, are you all thinking about an affordable housing developer?
Yes. Yes. For this one, we've definitely been looking at affordable housing. What range right now, I don't know that I can tell you today or that Adam's prepared on a specific range, but we are talking about true affordable housing, not just a development with market affordable.
Okay, that's helpful. And can you talk to me about some of the projects that have come out of this funding source previously?
Well, and let me clarify, are you talking about for just the acquisition or the overall project?
The acquisition.
Truthfully, it is, I don't know that we have, it's rare that we use contingency, but do you have one?
I'm not. Yeah, and I actually, when we did a round of briefings, I know Councilmember Flynn asked the same question as well about how we've used contingency in the past. And so, Lisa, you are correct. We don't, we may not use it every single year, but looking back through, there have been several times we've used contingency. We did use it in 2024 for a similar, well, not a similar real estate transaction, but for a real estate use. That was for the, it was earnest money for the Denver Post acquisition. 2023, there was not use of contingency. And then 2022 and 21, there was contingency use for emergency repairs at the Denver County Jail, as well as the Fleet Services Center. And then it wasn't used for 2020. I'm happy to go back and look for more if we need any more historicals. But yeah, that is the historic use of contingency.
Okay, that's really helpful because I'm trying to understand like what are the triggers that may cause us to want to use this. And it feels like in this budgetary environment that it doesn't seem like an emergency use in the same way that maybe in 2022 or 2021 in the examples that you gave. And I think to Pro Tem's point, it does move dollars away from other projects that may need those repairs with this maybe hyper-focus or over-reliance on the bond passing. And so I would be curious of that.
And if I may, and I really appreciate the sentiment and thought around emergency repairs and investments back in our facility, that has been a really important emphasis in the 2026 CIP as well as the 2025 CIP. I'm really proud of the investments we are making in that space. I could resend the figures out in terms of our reinvestment portfolio, but it is about $74 million in our transportation mobility space, about $29 million in the parks and recreation space, another $21 million or so we can get to the specific figures going back into our city facilities, and some of those facilities we've talked about that are especially challenging are slated to receive funding in the 26 CIP as well. So completely understand the emphasis and focus on supporting the needed repairs we do need in the city, and the 26 CIP makes a variety of strides there as well.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Those are all the questions I have. Now I might get back in the queue if anything else comes up. Thank you for your time.
Councilwoman, Council President Sandoval.
Thank you so much. How long have you been working on this project?
I probably started. They listed it at the beginning of the year, end of the year. Maybe it was actually almost a year ago. I think it was actually in 2024 where they had some brokers that I originally was talking to. And submitted an offer probably early in 2025, which actually was not transacted. And then the owners themselves reached out directly to me to tell me instead that they would like to just work directly with me. So it's been almost a year.
Okay. Do we have you sent us the purchase and sale agreement?
I don't think so. Happy to.
Yeah, can I see the purchase and sale agreement? That would be really helpful. So for Host, I have a couple questions for Host. In these type of projects, if we were to purchase this land, the purchase, it's for $2,500,000. And then an additional $25,000 for closing costs?
Up to. Yeah.
What happens, who's responsible? How do we get into partnerships? Because right now I think it's like a rental car space or something.
Truthfully, people are illegally parking there. So we're working with the owners trying to work through that.
So who pays for demo? Who pays for all environmental? Who pays for all of that?
Yes, traditionally, that is all done by the developer that we procure for the property. So, you know, it's not just that, you know, once we convey the property through a land lease or some other mechanism, we would require, a lot of due diligence from them before the actual project gets built. That could be an environmental phase one report. We'd obviously all want a market study as well to make sure that the plan that we have intended for the site is backed up by the market demand for that site as well. So it really does depend. I know that with real estate buying the property, there may be some of this due diligence that they could rely on as well. But for most affordable housing projects, we do require that the developer really fund the demolition, all the third-party reports like environmentals, market studies, appraisals for the future development that is.
If I could just add, or Council President, Adam's right. Normally, that is how we would do it. We've heard a lot recently, and given some situations that have occurred at another site, we are also looking at the potential, since it's such a small building, maybe we just demo it right out front. Now, I will say we've already received, while we still do our own due diligence, we have received, and Goodyear had to provide environmental reports before they could terminate the lease. So already working with DDPHE, I mean, there's nothing that is a major concern right at the moment. Okay. So that's the other piece of that. Yeah, there are no horrible flags coming up.
Okay. So to some of my colleagues' point, how does this fit in, this purchase fit into HOST's 5-year strategic plan? Like, I'll always go back. I know that this strategic plan is coming up, I think, in 2026, maybe 27, for a new iteration of it. Correct. But how does this fit within that 5-year plan to create a more holistic strategic advisory of what we're doing?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it's the creation of new units. So that 5-year plan had the goal of creating 7,000 units that are deed restricted affordable units below 80% of area median income. So it would definitely, fall into that part of the plan as well. I think there's also innovative kind of land use structures like the city ownership with, and then a lease structures to where the developer may own the improvements, but the city gets to own the underlying land. And I think what's most important, may not be, word for word what's in the plan, is that by owning the land and then RFPing it out to a qualified developer, we really get to determine what gets built there and who it serves. So I think we would be very specific in the eventual RFP of, we want to see these income ranges, these percent at 30, these percent at 50, and so on. If we want any ground floor activation, we could have requirements around that as well of nonprofit community serving facilities, roughly this amount of units, roughly this amount of 3 or 4 bedrooms. So we get to be very specific in that plan, which would hit on some of the other strategic planning items like deep affordability at the 30% level and below, family size 3 or 4 bedroom units. We would really get to dictate that before we select a development partner to build the eventual development.
Okay, so in our real estate plan, mm-hmm. like we don't have, I know Councilwoman Ortega had always asked about a strategic sure. real estate plan, mm-hmm. and I don't think we have, I don't know if we have.
Well, so not. My answer has always been, and this is based on conversations with lots of consultants as well, as other cities having this conversation. It is near impossible to have a one strategic real estate plan, just one plan, because we have so many different needs and purposes throughout, just based on agencies that have physical need of space and land. So we instead have multiple real estate plans for agencies instead. So we have master plans for Dottie. With HOST, it's not quite the same. We work in conjunction with their strategic plan. I'll say it that way. We have their master plans for parks. So we have those individual ones that we pull together.
Okay. So oftentimes if we were to purchase this right now, you said that they're like, I was just looking at the Google mm-hmm. site. How do we make sure that as city owners that it doesn't just sit there vacant for 4 years, 5 years?
Sure. For a couple of things, I need to go on the record. So we don't land bank. That's a state statute. So anytime we acquire, it is then very intentional that we are acquiring with a specific project in mind, understanding that it will be an affordable housing, that we're already within a range of knowing that. I think the difference in not having it sit versus Councilwoman, your concerns about other projects that aren't happening, is that for Adam and I and our teams, we don't have to wait on any other city agency. If council approves this, we can immediately move forward with the RFP like we've done on a number of transactions and just get it right in the hands of the developers.
So, okay, thank you. In downtown, does the city and county of Denver own anything like this? Have we done this before in downtown?
Not right at the moment. We have not. We've got a couple that were on East Colfax that we did, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago now. But we didn't, and we've got the Washington Street, which there'll be a groundbreaking at the end of this month, which is very exciting, but we do not have anything in the heart of downtown.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was pointed out by our parliamentarian that there might be a mistake with the dates. You all have this coming before full council on October 13th, but we actually aren't meeting that day because it's Indigenous Peoples Day. Right, so it's a paid city holiday. So okay. It'd be the 14th.
Thank you
just
very much.
For nope. Record keeping and clearing. I feel like everyone has asked a lot of the questions that I actually had. I just wanted to make sure that we communicated that with you all. As far as the, you know, outlook of affordable housing for this particular project, I guess my ask would be, you know, can we be kept in the loop on that and what that is going to look like? Because I think, you know, what my experience has been in just the last few years on council is, there's always good intentions on affordable housing and what that is going to look like. And then sometimes it ends up being pretty nominal. And I worry about that with this being especially where it is in downtown and all of the activation that is being lifted up by the administration. I am just curious. I have lots of curiosities of how this fits in with that greater plan as well. And so I know that's not necessarily for maybe you to answer, and is a much bigger picture of you've got all the downtown activation and now we're putting affordable housing, which I'm not opposed to. Like, we should have affordable housing everywhere in our city, absolutely. But just wanting to make sure that we're not just giving lip service on something, right? That this is actually the intention, and that intention will hold up going forward.
And it's coordinated. Yes. So I hear you, and I will say we already are probably behind the scenes having those thoughtful conversations just to make sure that it's not like just this one thing that's plunked down there. And I think Adam and I both will commit that we are happy to come back as we get closer to that RFP of at least notifying all of you when it goes out, so that you know that we are continuing that, and it isn't just going to sit and languish for the next few years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And actually on the point of like sitting, how long are we expecting it would be vacant? And
I would say probably by the time we do an RFP and have a response, that alone would be about 6 months. The timing of it then from there, because I'm assuming, again, whether it's tax credits and or DDA, you know, there still will be this time frame that we may not be able to start, shovels in the ground right at that moment. But if we, that's the other reason why we really have, and especially after conversations with you too, I think, thought about just demoing the building, mm-hmm. we can be, it will allow us to maybe manage that site a little bit better in that interim period of time, where the city can still have oversight of it for parking. And again, we'll still need to coordinate even with our CPD friends and how it's used appropriately. But at least we won't have a vacant building sitting there, would be the goal.
Okay, so wouldn't be housing anybody temporarily anymore?
Nope.
Okay. And when I mean housing, I mean
yep,
offices for
yes,
city employees.
Yes. But no, I think just and given some of the things, again, that we've experienced with other vacant buildings, waiting for developers to just be ready to have shovels in the ground, I think that that's where we came full circle, that it probably is better served to just take it down.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We will return to the far reaches of cyberspace and bring Councilwoman Lewis back into the queue. Councilwoman.
Thank you so much, joining you all from cyberspace. I had one more question. We mentioned the bond. Is it possible for us to bring this after the bond passes, or after we know a decision about the bond?
Question, Councilwoman, and I will say no. The truth is this purchase and sale agreement has been sitting for a couple months, waiting as there have been other really important topics coming through City Council and as the committees were restructured. And so these sellers, just given some personal reasons of theirs, and they are all out of state, I have a deadline that if this doesn't move forward or not, they have told me that they may go ahead and just walk. And so that's why trying to put off the approval until after the election, based on the last conversation I had with the sellers, I do not believe, honestly, that they would agree to that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. So Lisa, what? Give me the schedule again as it sits, because we're...
The timeline?
Yeah, we're close to election.
14th would be first reading, 20th would be second reading. So by the end of the month, potentially, if council approved it, then there would be a fully executed purchase and sale agreement.
And we have no room to delay as your evaluation.
I will say, based on the last call I had with them, that would be correct.
Okay. Thank you very much. Seeing no further questions, we will, I'll call this up in a block if there are no objections. 25-14-25 and 25-14-26. Any need to vote? Are we ready to move this forward to the full council? Seeing no objection, we'll see you in council soon. There are five items on consent. If anyone needs to pull anything off, please let staff know in short order. That being said, no further business. This committee is adjourned.